Hello and welcome to the Rancor's Brothel, issue number 34. I'm your co-host Matt.
I'm your co-host Dustin.
And with us today, we have Follow Network superfan Jeff Thorpe, and in a little bit we're going to have Drew Thomas come in from last week's Lord of the Rings episode. We're going to do our Lord of the Rings part two. So my apologies to Drew that we couldn't wait on you to start the episode, but we had a scheduling issue, so I apologize, sir. Let's just go with Jeff. Say hi.
Hey, everybody.
Yay, Jeff Thorpe. Yay.
Yay.
So we got some things to talk about this week, guys. First and foremost, before we begin, let's clarify something. I've had a lot of offers for folks to help take over hosting duties here at the brothel. Dustin is taking a hiatus, I believe you said, a sabbatical.
Yeah, I'm calling it a sabbatical. I guess I'm getting my doctorate in life. That's what people do. They take a sabbatical to get their doctorate, right?
I have no idea.
I had been using that term not knowing the whole doctorate end of it, so apparently I have to become a doctor.
Well, good for you. A PhD in socializing.
Hmm.
Sounds
like
a plan.
PhD in living my life.
So Dustin's going to take some time away from the brothel, and in the meantime, I'm going to Kelly Ripa it. And just instead of having the two of us host and then bring in another person for the special guest star, just going to have a rotating seat of folks
just
in here.
Just please don't pick Michael Strahan.
If I want to pick Michael Strahan, I will. So you can just fucking, on your sabbatical, you can just fuck it.
Well, I was planning on listening during my sabbatical, but Michael Strahan is your guest. Your guest speaker, not guest, your guest co-host, I'm not going to listen.
I know we don't talk about sports too often here on the show, but, I mean, seriously, when the Giants won the Super Bowl, Michael Strahan got a deal advertising for Subway, or I'm sorry, for Thubway, seriously. He couldn't have went to fucking Burger King that has no S's in it. Fucking ridiculous. I'm hearing a lot of movement over there. I'm hearing a lot of mouth noises. Jeff, are you kissing the microphone?
No, I'm not.
Don't lie. Jeff, are you blowing me kisses? Oh, Jeff. Jeff. Okay.
Not out that end.
Whoa. Are you farting at me? Are you making your butthole wink?
Yeah.
Gross.
It's a talent.
That's not a talent. That's a career.
I once paid $10 to see something like that at a party. Gentlemen, so Dustin is going away. If you would like to be on an episode of the Rancor's Brothel, email me at matt@followthe.tv. You can tweet us. You can do it on the Facebook. You can send in your application any way you see fit. There is an application fee of $10, payable in Coors Light or in American currency, whichever you prefer. Or you could just come be on the show, I guess. But if you want to give me beer or money for it, that's cool, too. What do we do? This will be one of the last of two times I get to say this, but Dustin, what do we do first?
Discount X-Men?
Is that it, or is it guest questions? Have you ever done the guest questions for Jeff?
I don't know.
No, I didn't.
All right.
Although most of it was covered on the episode I was on.
Right.
Let's give him a refresher, Jeff.
Okay.
Jeff, who's your favorite superhero and why?
Nightcrawler. He was always the heart of the X-Men, which is my favorite comic series. He kind of embodied the X-Men, the feared and hated, but still fought to protect the ones who feared and hated him.
Right.
So yeah, he's a conundrum, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He kind of had the spirit of the X-Men.
So, you know, if I were to pick Nightcrawler, I would pick him because he can teleport and I hate walking places. Does that play into it at all for you? Is the power of importance, his acrobatic skills, for instance, having a badass tail with a blade on the end of it, anything like that?
The hiding in shadows, the blending in the shadows and everything like that. I always like that, but
the glowing creepy yellow eyes, that's kind of badass. Yeah.
The brimstone puffs of smoke.
Bam.
Yeah.
Okay, very good, very good.
Okay, Jeff, mm-hmm. If you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Teleportation.
Okay.
Because I hate walking places.
Good answer. That's a very novel answer. No, not what's the word?
No, novel, very, new.
Yeah.
Original.
Yeah, very original answer there, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. No, I would love to be able to go anywhere I wanted to just pop into someplace I've always wanted to see and not have to spend a year or two planning a trip.
That would be sweet. You ever seen Jumper?
Yeah.
Like, Jumper, the cool thing about their teleportation is it was literally anywhere. You know, like, Nightcrawler, he's limited by about 2 miles, I believe.
Something like that, but yeah. he could chain jump.
What's that mean?
He could jump 2 miles, jump 2 more miles, jump 2 more miles.
Doesn't that sound exhausting?
It is after a while. I remember, like, in the Ultimate Comics, he tried to teleport with a snowmobile, and he collapsed afterwards.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And there was in a recent story, I think in the AVX line, like right before it maybe, he was stranded in the middle of the ocean. And so what he would do is he would teleport himself like pretty high up off of the ground, but as far as he could see on the horizon, so about 2 miles away. And then as he's falling towards the water, he would do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he had to travel back to land that way, and he had to do it a couple hundred times, and it, you know, when he got to land, he just collapsed. It was just exhaustion.
Yeah.
So.
And he's very limited by sight, and teleporting where he can see.
I got to think that that's a psychological block for Nightcrawler. You know what I mean? Like, none of the other teleporters have that issue in the X universe, including his own father.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Azazel.
Azazel. So it just makes you think that maybe that's a mental block of his own. That there's got to be something inherent with his power that's not going to allow him to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, for this third question, we typically ask something that's off the wall, random, unrelated to the first two questions. I actually am going to go a little deeper today. Jeff, where's the line?
Christ. Just kidding. Go ahead.
Jeff, where is the line between insanity and creativity?
Ooh.
And, of course, we can ask a different question if that's...
No, that's fine. Okay. Probably about 3 steps past painting with your own shit.
So leave it at that. That's perfect.
That is a great answer. Oh, my God.
I love it.
3 steps beyond painting with your own shit.
Oh, man, that's good. That's good.
God bless you, sir.
All right, so, Discount X-Men?
Yes, Discount X-Men, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay, we came up with two tonight between Brenton and I. First one is going to be the Human Flea. He's a one-shot X-Man. He has the ability to leap into space, or like he can leap high enough to where it's just to that point where he's just about to leave the atmosphere. He can either push just hard enough to get into space and keep going, or he could get to that point up there just before the edge of the atmosphere and then just pummel down to Earth.
Pummel would be punching in the face.
He could pump. If he's got somebody in his grasp, he's going to pummel them down to Earth. Right?
Will he survive the fall? Is that a part of his mutant powers?
No, he will not survive the fall. That's why he's a one-shot X-Man.
Okay.
And he cannot survive in space either.
So pretty much his one out is to grab the bad guy and then jump into space or just jump really high.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
So that's the Human Flea. The other fella, his name is Ham Chops. He's not a one-use X-Man. He has the ability to do this infinitely. He can turn his hands into hams, and he fights with them.
I don't get it.
You know, are they glazed so they'd be really messy? And
yeah.
So, that's why he's a discount X-Men guy. I mean, these aren't amazing powers, but so it's his name's Ham Chops.
I mean, are they like ham hocks, or are they actually little pigs?
I kind of want...
like squealing with every punch.
Well,
like every time you hit your enemy in the face, you're actually hurting the piglet on your hand.
There is a machine that a villain is using. He's trying to create this army of ham-related like henchmen, and he's pushing these guys out, and he's testing them. So one of them does have glazed processed hams. One of them has piglets. You know, one of them has full-on hogs that he's dragging around all the time. But yeah, so but each one of them, like, he decides that, you know, this particular henchman is just not going to make it. Of course, he just kills him and, you know, tosses him into a river. But each villain's name is Ham Chops, but there's multiple versions of them, and he's trying to perfect it.
Okay. I don't understand that. His ham hands?
Yeah.
Do they regenerate? Like, because I'd imagine there's not, you know, like, there's only the one bone in a ham.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, fatty flesh around it that's been cooked. So if you go to punch somebody, it's going to shred the meat.
Yeah.
Does that hurt him?
I would assume so. I mean, that particular version of Ham Chops, it's going to hurt him, and the meat is not going to do any damage just because the meat is going to shred. So the mysterious villain, we haven't seen his face yet. We don't know what he looks like, who he is, what his intentions are, but he has decided that particular ham version of the Ham Chops is not fit to be a proper henchman.
To be in the League of Ham Chopians?
Yes. I would call it the pen rather than the league, or the what's a
sty?
What's the term for... Yes, the henchman's sty. But what's the is there a term for multiple pigs? There's a term for that, right? Like it's not a herd.
Oh, like a flock of pigs or something?
Bryn says it's a swine party, so we're gonna call it a party of pigs, just for fun. I don't think that's a thing, but it is now.
Wow, when you go to Google and type in what, here's the four things that come up. What does the fox say?
Oh.
What is twerking? What does the fox say lyrics? And what is Obamacare? That's fucking tragic.
Oh, America.
A drove or a pharaoh of pigs.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's what I was typing.
A pharaoh
of pigs. That's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any discount X-Men?
Well, you weren't done explaining something with Ham Chops here. His ham hands, do they regenerate? Like, every time he calls out his power, they're two fresh hams?
They do.
So can he eat them?
I would say so. I mean, he should be able to eat his hams.
Oh, my God. He just solved world hunger.
Yeah, right there. We'll just shave his hands every day. It's so funny, because have you ever heard the phrase, hands like hams?
No.
That's what you would call a baby born with really large hands.
Okay.
You would say they were born with hands like hams and feet like gunboats.
Interesting.
Yeah. There you go. Ham Chop. Not excited for that one. I'm so sorry.
You don't have to be. I love it.
I'm trying to think of one right now, and it's just not coming to me. I'm going to be like googly on.
While you're thinking about it, I have a question for you two. Have there been superheroes that were originally created to be bad guys or villains, and then they went through some mental change, or you know, they realized what they're doing was bad? I mean, I think Wolverine was created to be to fight for evil, right? Is that
no, he was not. No.
Okay, so who do you guys can you guys think of any examples?
The Thunderbolts. Villains?
Thunderbolt.
The Thunderbolts.
Okay, Thunderbolts.
A group of rehabilitated villains.
Oh, So it's a that's like a whole league or a group of them.
Yeah, yeah. Baron Zemo was the leader, I think. I don't know much about it.
And what was that group that Mystique and Toad became a part of? It was a Freedom Force?
Something like that.
Does that sound right? And that was for ex-members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants to work for the government.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And during Civil War, they had a bunch of villains who signed on with the government to get to hunt down the rogue heroes.
So, yeah, I mean, there are instances of that. Why do you ask?
Oh, I'm just thinking that there needs to be a, like, hero or anti-hero or something that is... I think there's the potential for a good story with a guy that's being chased by the people who created him to put him down, and then also he is essentially, for lack of a better term, just fighting crime.
The Incredible Hulk?
I guess.
Hell, I got one for you. Your favorite X-Man, Dustin.
Gambit?
Yes. Oh. He worked for Mr. Sinister. He led the Marauders to the Morlock tunnels.
Which resulted in the death of all the Morlocks.
And Angel getting his wings ripped off. And
mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was part of a lot of those horrible deeds, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, I'm not going to write that story.
Sorry, Dustin. Hate to shit on your parade there, buddy.
No, I mean, there's tons of, like, stories throughout, like, comic history that parallel each other, I'm sure. Like, the same idea, just different faces. I mean,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was just something that I was thinking about.
Well, here's my discount X-Man. Are you ready?
Okay.
Sparkle Poos.
Sparkle Poos?
Sparkle Poos.
Okay.
Sparkle Poo, every time he takes a dump, it's rainbow colored. It's like striped with all the colors of the rainbow. It's got sparkles in it, like glitter. Mm-hmm. It smells and tastes amazing and carries all the nutritional value required to maintain a human being's life.
Can he do the Curlicue?
Okay. Can you do like a coiler? I mean, it just depends on what he's ate.
No, like the Dairy Queen Curlicue.
I used to work at a Dairy Queen. I resent that, sir. That's gross. Chocolate cone. No, so, you know, the problem is like if there's a situation where they're imprisoned by bad guys, they're not being taken care of, they can always eat his poo. But the problem is they're eating a man's poo.
And it tastes like poo, right?
No, it tastes wonderful.
Oh, okay.
It tastes like whatever your favorite food is.
Yeah.
But it's poop.
Well, I mean, if it looks not like poop, I mean, it's shaped like poop.
It's shaped exactly like poop. It's just rainbow striped.
If it's rainbow striped, does it smell like poop?
No.
Okay. I don't see the issue there.
It smells like watermelons.
We're going past creativity into insanity, guys.
This is another good
example. We're not painting with it. We're eating it. Come on, Jeff.
I'm not sure which one's worse.
Love it.
All right, same scenario. It tastes amazing, but it smells like shit.
Okay. There had to have been some caveat. Because if all three of those things look like taste and smell... You were like,
sign me up. I will eat that man's shit every day. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I will eat that poop. Okay.
But because if it smells like in such poop, high demand, he's on like a 4,000 calorie a day diet. Mm. Just to poop so much.
Interesting.
So, okay, if it smells like shit, would you eat it? It smells like shit, but it tastes like whatever your... What's your favorite food, Dustin?
Probably, offhand, I go with like sushi.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
It tastes like a nice sashimi tuna.
Like, well, I'm going like sushi roll, probably, not necessarily just sushi.
Okay.
It tastes like a California roll or something.
Yeah, a little wasabi.
Okay. But it smells like poop?
Yep.
Well, like, how much, there's a certain percentage of your taste that actually involves smell as well, right?
Well, they say that if you plug your nose, then you can't taste anything. So you have to be able to breathe through your nose in order to taste stuff.
Okay.
But it's not going to alter the flavor at all, the smell.
It's so just going to
smell like shit.
I'm going to put a cartoony, a very cartoony clothespin on my nose and eat that poop.
But then what's the point of eating it? It doesn't taste like, it won't taste like your fucking California rolls.
Well, am I eating it for pleasure or for, like, survival? Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, this was a survival situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, then hell yeah, I'm going to eat that poop.
Hell, if it was a survival situation and it was regular poop, I'd probably eat it. Fuck it.
Yeah. Clip of the day. Hell yeah, I'm going to eat that poop.
This clip of the day brought to you by Dustin Leinenbach. Remember, when you think of eating shit, think Dustin Leinenbach.
Bring and follow networks to new lows.
God. Okay. Dustin, what do we do after Discount X-Men?
Versus. No. Star Wars Minute.
Oh, the Star Wars Minute. Right on. First of all, Dustin, any Star Wars questions I can answer for you today?
What's the undergarment situation in the Star Wars universe?
None. Everybody goes commando.
Gotcha. Moving on.
I can't verify that. I'm sorry.
I know in the video games, when you take the armor and everything off, they do have undergarments on.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I figure it's like almost, I picture the like colonial type, very baggy white shirts and like shorts and stuff.
I want to talk about the huts today.
Okay.
Pizza
the huts?
Yeah, Pizza the Hut from
Spaceballs.
Spaceballs, yes, thank you. He was trapped in his limo for 8 hours, was forced to eat himself. Dustin, what do you know about the huts? You just know Jabba?
I know Jabba. He's large, green, is it?
Yeah, greenish, green and brown a little bit.
Yeah, but honestly, as far as his intentions and things, no idea. He enslaved Leia, right? Or is that somebody else?
Yes, he did. He was a big fan of slavery, if you recall. His sister Gardula used to own the Skywalker family.
I did not know that he was part of a family.
Well, I mean, everybody's got to come from somewhere, don't they?
Right, but I didn't know that his family was prominent in the Star Wars universe.
Oh, I mean, they're not prominent, but anyway, huts. Sorry.
Yes, teach me about them.
Huts come in a variety of colors. 7 different colors. Can anybody guess what colors are on the list? You can already get 2, pretty much, green and brown, right?
Mm-hmm.
So give me 5 more colors that you think a fucking a hut would be, a big slimy fucking slug.
Brown.
We already said brown and green.
Green.
Okay. You're really not in the spirit of this.
Gray.
No, not gray.
Red?
White.
No red, no white. Here are the colors. Orange. Okay. Green. Oh. Blue.
We already said
brown.
Green.
Purple.
We already said brown.
Shut the fuck up. Purple. Turquoise and pink.
I did not expect the rest of those colors.
Yeah, could you imagine seeing a purple fucking hut? That'd be disgusting.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Huts live to over 1,000 years is their standard lifespan, and they are hermaphroditic. So, you know, we refer to Jabba the Hutt as male. They use, you know, male pronouns with him, he and his and what have you. But technically he's a shim, a he-she. They give birth to their own Okay, sorry. Hermaphroditic. So they have both their female and male sex organs. They mate with themselves. So if you tell Jabba the Hutt to go fuck himself, guess what? He can do that. And he can make a baby from it. Jabba's actually a father, if you recall from the Clone Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of telling someone to go F themselves, could you say go reproduce like a hut?
How come you didn't say fuck just now?
Because I said F instead.
Pussy. I guess, yes, you could. Although you'd probably get beaten for that. I'd be like, what the fuck that nerd just say to me? Ba-bow.
I'm going to say it to a jock when I'm going to geometry class tomorrow.
Right. Aren't you like 27?
Shh.
Anyway. okay, those high schoolers won't know what hit them. They're 1,000 years old. They speak Huttese. Come in a variety of colors. They are listed as gastropods, so like slugs of earth, but they're like marsupials. They have a pouch to raise their young in.
That's awesome.
Yeah, isn't that fucking weird? Huts have to choose their own sex, like what they want to identify themselves as. They want to be considered female or male to society at large, which is also interesting. I mean, that's the general... Sorry. That's the generalities of it. Because I can go a little more in-depth if you want. Does anybody care?
I kind of care.
You kind of care? That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for kind of caring, Fred. You're a good man. Let's see here. Okay, huts are physiological anomalies as they possess traits from many different species. Similar to sea mammals, their nostrils can close, and their large lungs allow them to stay submerged underwater for hours at a time.
That's cool.
Okay, then we get into the hermaphroditic part, then the marsupial part. What else? They're generally classified as gastropods by scientists due to their hermaphroditic nature and slithering, slug-like manner of their movement. Isn't that racist? Wait, like, we are scientifically classifying your species based on the fact that you look like a slug.
Yeah, kinda.
They have specialized throats that, so when we eat something, we digest the food in our stomach with the acids in our stomach. Their body, as food's going down the throat, these, like, organic razor blades called radula shred the meat as it's going down their throats to help aid in digestion.
Okay. So do they have teeth as well or no?
They do not, so they swallow their food whole.
Interesting.
They also have the ability to see in ultraviolet light.
Okay.
And so, it's invisible to humans and most other alien species in the Star Wars universe. And so when Leia goes and frees Han from the carbonite in Return of the Jedi, what Leia doesn't know is that many huts will spread ultraviolet light, ultraviolet like lighting throughout their homes to give the intruders the impression of stealth, even though the hut is perfectly capable of seeing them even in pitch black.
Oh yeah.
And so that's what happened to Leia. That's how she was caught.
Okay.
So fun fact right there.
Cool.
You know, for as little as you see huts in stories, you never really get much depth into them. There's a lot of depth in that.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, you know?
Yeah.
Huts, because of their long-livedness, for instance, a hut named Zykros lived to be 1,700 years old. They, in many respects, turned to lives of crime. It's not to say that huts are evil, but it's to say that they value easy money. And easy money, it would be taking money from others. And if a hut is on a human world where thievery gets a 45-year jail sentence, when you can expect to live to be over 1,000 years old, that's really not that bad a deal.
Right. So would you say, as far as their... I can't think of the word. Go ahead. I never can. The range of good to evil, like I can think of
alignment.
There you go. Thank you. Neutral evil. That's, you think that'd be about right? Or
yeah, in most cases, that sounds about right.
They don't do a whole lot of good, right?
No, but there have been some that have.
Okay. I don't know. I'd almost classify them more as like true neutral.
True neutral, like just wherever money,
or maybe chaotic, or maybe chaotic neutral.
Okay.
Because they don't care about law, so they're closer to chaotic than anything.
I mean, they do have loyalty. Mm-hmm. They have loyalty to their own clans.
Like lawful neutral, then?
But
yeah, no.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't say lawful.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that each one of these huts probably has a different alignment depending on their, like who they're, shacked up with.
Shacked up with. Very good.
In cahoots with?
Wow, this is a very long article. I should read all of this someday. But I'm not going to do it now. So that concludes our little bit of hut talk. Maybe next week we'll talk about the Hut Cataclysm, a terrifying civil war amongst the Hut clans.
Interesting.
It's the slowest charge ever.
You know what? That's a common misnomer. Hutts are capable of moving faster than a human being.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah. I think first time I heard that was in the book Shadows of the Empire that takes place between...
I even read that.
Yeah. Takes place between Empire and Jedi. So yeah, Hutts can move very fast. Don't be fooled by their fat lookingness and their slithering. Hell, snakes can move fast. They slither, right? So there you go. That's your Star Wars Minute. We talked about Hutts today. Dustin.
Yeah.
What's next, buddy?
The voices.
The voices.
Yes.
The voices in your head?
Yeah. The verses today is going to be between two. Well, one of these fellas is not on my favorites list, and he never will be. Edward Cullen from the Twilight Saga. Britain has all three Twilight DVDs.
Well, there's four. Oh, Breaking Dawn is in two parts.
A five, maybe. Britain has all of them on Blu-ray. His parents decided to get them for him for Christmas. He was thrilled.
Did Brenton watch them?
No, they're all still in their packaging. I think he hasn't opened one of them.
The very last one was fun.
They didn't say that. They just didn't.
The part two of the last one is like a fight between like hundreds of vampires, and it's pretty badass.
Okay.
With werewolves and all sorts of shit. It's kind of cool.
See, they actually put that in the movies, I guess. The books, they cut around the fights and never gave any details about them.
That's very true. I don't think they could have made that very appealing in a visual medium.
No.
If they kept it the exact same way it was written. So I'm glad they did that. It was a fun battle, though. It was very fun. Who else, Dustin? Who else is fighting with Edward Cullen?
Our second guy is a fella named Blade.
Blade from the Marvel Universe.
And he is a fella that hunts vampires.
Yes, he is. He's essentially a dampier, a half-breed.
Mm-hmm.
His mother was a prostitute who was bitten by a vampire while she was pregnant almost a term with Blade. Mm-hmm. And he was delivered after her death.
It's a clever way to create him, to create Blade.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Let's have a rundown of the powers of these two fellers.
Okay.
Before we go any further here. Dustin, what do you know about Edward Cullen?
Not a whole lot. I probably... being that I've never seen 1 second of a Twilight movie or read any of the books, I, as far as Edward Cullen goes... the only good, like, reviews I've gotten of him were from you, speaking about how he's actually very powerful. We're involved. He fights a teenage werewolf that is possibly Pacific Islander. That's what I know of Edward Cullen. Is that a pretty good description?
Yeah, I mean, he's not Pacific Islander, but yeah.
No, not Edward Cullen, but the werewolf.
Neither was the werewolf.
Oh. He's kind of tan.
Yeah, he's a Native American.
Shirtless.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The Cullen family, the vampires in the Twilight Universe. Jeff, if I'm wrong on anything, please stop me. I have read the books. I used to have, when I worked at Lids, I had a 16-year-old girl that worked for me, and she recommended that I read one of them, and this is before the movies hit and everything. She's like, check this out. You might like it. So I read it, and I pretty much, if I start reading something, I have to finish the series.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before Breaking Dawn had came out as a book, and so I did. I read them all. I'm not going to lie. I'm not too proud to admit it.
I did, too. I can't thoroughly make fun of a series of books unless I read them, so...
So you read them with the intent of making fun of them?
Yeah, my then wife raved about them and said I needed to read them, and so I got halfway through the first one and realized that no, I'm not going to enjoy this.
But you still read them?
Yes, I actually stopped halfway through the first one.
Oh, that's funny.
And came back to it like a year later and said I'm going to finish this because it drove me nuts to. yeah, I it drove me nuts to walk away from a book.
That's funny, Jeff.
Even though it was horrible.
I mean, they're not that bad. Gosh. Yeah, fucking haters. I mean, if you want to talk about bad things in Twilight, Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart, no es bueno.
I never gave the movies much of a chance.
You should get yourself some cocktails, sit down, and try to sit through some of them, see how it goes. All that lovey-dovey fucking emo bullshit. You'll fucking get in a bathtub and open a vein in like 5 minutes. It'll be great, except for the dead part. Don't be dead. Dustin.
Yes.
The vampires in the Twilight universe are extraordinarily strong.
Mm-hmm.
To an almost Superman degree. For instance, one, upon being freshly made into a vampire, Bella, in the fourth book, goes to grab a boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And when she goes to grip the boulder, her fingers go through the rock just like your fingers would go through a stick of butter.
Oh, wow.
So extraordinary strength, mm-hmm. which, you know, in turn makes them extraordinarily fast, excellent leaping ability.
Would you say that's stronger or weaker than, quote-unquote, superhuman strength?
Well, I mean, superhuman strength is so... It just depends on what... Yeah. Like, Spider-Man is as strong as 10 men.
Mm-hmm.
But he has super strength. Superman can lift, you know, can... If you want to believe Superman Returns, can move an entire continent made out of kryptonite.
Right.
And that's superhuman strength. So, I mean, there's a varying degree there.
Okay.
But they are extraordinarily strong. I would put them at... Luke Cage strength.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe Colossus style strength. If they have any inherent abilities as a human being, then when they are made into vampires, those abilities are enhanced to the nth degree. So Edward Cullen, who had minor inklings of a telepathic of mind reading ability. When he was made into a vampire, he couldn't shut it off. So he can hear everybody thinking. He can read everybody's mind constantly.
He has no control over it.
He can control it.
Okay.
But he also has the ability to just hear everything everywhere at the same time.
Wow, that's got to be intense.
So, I mean, that's like Charles Xavier-ish, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What he can't do... Like Charles Xavier is put suggestions into a person's mind. He couldn't make you do something, but he can read your every thought. Like if you were fighting with him,
he can't communicate. You're going
to punch him, huh?
He can't communicate telepathically, can he?
No, he can only hear you.
Okay.
So if you were going to punch me in the face, I would know it before you threw the punch, so I could already be blocking.
Do you think that there are people out there that can, recognize when he reading their mind, like they can feel it?
I'm sure that there are some
beings out there.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't think it was explored ever, but
no,
it sounds right.
Okay.
And I guess that's about it. Wouldn't you say?
Speed.
Edward's the fastest in his family, but the speed, you know, comes from their superhuman strength. Yeah. And the sun does not hurt them. There's no religious iconography that will hurt them. It just makes them sparkly. They're beautiful, I guess, apparently.
How do you feel about that? Is that something that you're glad that they didn't make happen, considering other vampires, like that your typical vampire is affected by the sun? Or
I mean, when you write something like this, you've got to put a spin on it to make it your own.
Yeah.
So I respect that.
That makes them more powerful, really.
Yeah, because they're able to go out in the daytime. That's why they live in Forks, Washington, which is like the rainiest place in the United States. Like it has like 4 days of sunshine every year.
Oh. Okay.
So they're able to pose as human beings and like go to school and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is very interesting. you know, one other thing to bring up is blah. What the fuck was I gonna say? Fuck it. Move on to. Oh no, the only way to destroy a vampire from that universe is to rend it limb from limb. Which I will say too, in the movies when they do that, it's amazing because they make it sound like sheet metal, like you're tearing sheet metal. Such cool sound editing.
And when the skin actually breaks, it's like cracking rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Fucking watch one of those fucking movies, man. Watch the last two. But anyway. So the only way to do that is to rend them limb from limb, take the head off, and then burn it. Because their shit can be reattached. So you have to use an accelerant and light them on fire. Understood?
Understood.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Blade. Dustin, what do you know about Blade?
Blade, just simply looking at his Wikipedia page. superhuman strength. He's got speed, stamina, agility, reflexes, and durability. How those match up to Edward Cullen, not entirely sure. He does have a healing factor. He has the ability to sense supernatural creatures, and I would say that Edward Cullen is a supernatural creature.
I will give him that.
It says that he is a skilled martial artist, swordsman, and marksman. And he can suck blood. I mean, he's part vampire, so he could suck blood. So, but I don't know, as far as weaknesses, is he affected by the sun?
No. No, he is not.
Okay, good deal.
So they can both fight in broad daylight or midnight, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Blade's also got years of training hunting vampires.
Yeah, how old is Blade?
Blade is 75, and Edward Cullen was born in like 1901, so he's a hair over 100.
Okay, so roughly the same age considering their span. I mean, it's not too far off.
Yeah, except, you know, if you're 75 years ago, a black man grew up in a much different way than a sparkly fucking vampire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just saying.
Tis true. So I would say that Blade is going to come out of that sort of childhood a lot more rugged. He's going to have more wherewithal than Edward Cullen.
Mm-hmm. Edward Cullen's been he's been babied for over 100 years. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a virgin.
Blade has this for sure.
That's what happens when you have a devout Mormon write a book about vampire teenagers.
Yeah.
They're all virgins. I've been waiting 110 years for this. That'd be such an explosion of cum. Oh my god.
There it is. There it is.
I brought cum up. Yay.
Yes, you did.
Okay, anywho. Gentlemen, where are we fighting?
Jeff chose number 19, which is going to be Smurf Village.
I love everything about this.
Now, are they the size of the Smurfs?
No, it makes it even better.
Okay, they're full size.
Yeah. Just stepping on screaming Smurfs.
Yeah.
Smurf Village can fit inside a, like, probably like a four circle, right? It is.
I'm sorry, you kind of cut out. They could fit in a what?
Like a, they could fit inside a, like a, let's say a professional wrestling ring. Like Smurf Village is quite small.
Yeah, I mean, what's a professional wrestling ring? 25 by 25?
Yes.
Give or take?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would put that about right. I mean, Jeff, you grew up watching the Smurfs like myself, I'm sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it was that big, but.
I mean, what? There's 101 Smurfs, and most of them have their own house, and their houses are like one room toadstools.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of how big those houses are compared to like Gargamel's feet.
I mean, 20 by 20.
I don't know. I would, like, those Smurfs would probably be about the size of an action figure.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, anybody here watch the Smurfs live action movies?
No.
Okay. Well, I did. Fuck off. I work with children. I went with kids from
just
work.
Just your tone, the tone. You could be like, well, yeah, I did. This is the thing that I saw. But you were like, well, I did. So that's why I laughed.
I guess I did invite the laughter there, didn't I? I'm sorry.
Yeah. And a wrestling ring is 20 by 20.
20 by 20, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Austin says it so many times on his podcast. I should have remembered. I'm an idiot.
Damn it.
Yeah. He calls it a 20 by 20 squared circle.
All right. The fight commences.
Yes. Why are they in Smurf Village?
Well, Edward Cullen is a vegetarian by vampire standards, in that he only drinks the blood of animals, so he regularly has to go out and hunt in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So while he's out hunting, Mr. Blade got wind of a coven of vampires living in the Northwest. Oh, shit, except the Smurfs live in France. Whatever. Smurf Village at this point is now in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
So
that'll work.
Blade hears a whispering of a coven in the Pacific Northwest. He happened to be hunting those same woods looking for vampires, and ba-boom. The chase is on. What happens?
Well, from the Smurf perspective, it's kind of like a Godzilla movie with the two giant things.
Godzilla and Rodan fighting.
Yeah.
It's like, how often in Mighty Morphin Power Rangers do they have to rebuild Angel City? Like, seriously. Every week there's a giant fucking robot fighting a giant fucking pig monster or whatever.
That's what I always say. There should be superhero insurance for the civilians inside these cities.
Well, there is. In Marvel, they have, there's a company that does just that.
Okay.
Like, they use superhuman stuff themselves to clean up. Like, they use, like, shrink rays and stuff to shrink down the rubble.
Right on.
And, you know, just put it in, like, into a dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
Cleans it up real fast. Something like that. How does this fight go?
Well, Edward Cullen is already there. Blade is tracking him. Blade is going to have the advantage, I would think.
No.
Right away. Cullen's not going to be expecting it, is he?
Cullen would hear him coming.
He's what?
He'd hear Cullen him coming, hear man. Thoughts. Super senses.
Oh, okay.
He'd hear his thoughts.
Well, they're sense each other then. Because, like, Blade can sense superhuman or supernatural
beings.
Okay,
so it's like the Highlander, right? They both get that weird tingle and they just start heading towards each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're both gonna. I feel like they're both gonna remain in what there is of the shadows. I mean, they're not gonna be just like blatantly running towards each other in the open. They're gonna be.
Blade's just gonna have his sword up, charging. Ah! Edward Cullen, like, please, I haven't known the touch of a woman. Don't kill me.
Edward Cullen constantly adjusting his skinny jeans as he's running towards Blade.
sparkles. The sparkles actually initially blind Blade.
Okay.
It's like when you get it, like catch a glare off of a mirror.
Mm-hmm. Blade has some pretty sweet sunglasses.
You know what? That's true. He's always wearing sunglasses, so even the sparkles won't work against the Blade. Hmm.
Nope. Sparkles. Count that out.
Sparkle poos.
Oh, boy.
So
will Blade's weapons work against Edward's skin?
I would believe that they do.
I mean, if these blades have killed many other vampires.
Yeah, if steel's sharp enough, it would cut into one of those one of the vampires in the Twilight universe.
Okay.
Let's say they make it to each other, and they start fighting it out.
Like, just fisticuffs? Like, put up your dukes?
Yeah.
Because I gotta say that's probably how Edward Cullen, being born in 1901, would probably fight.
Right.
In, like, old-timey boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, didn't like he have to have the one guy, the other brother or whatever, teach him how to fight?
Oh, yeah, I think he did. He'd have Keelan Lutz teach him how to fight or something.
Yeah.
Or Jackson.
Whatever. Okay, Edward Cullen has all this strength and stuff, but I don't think, from what you guys have told me,
to use it.
No, I don't think that he's got the skills with a Z. I think Blade has it, personally.
Yeah.
I mean,
quite possible.
You guys have seen the movies, or Matt, you've seen the movies, and you both read
movies?
The books. No, I'm the Twilight movies.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those too.
When he's fought in those movies, like, how has it kind of gone down?
he's very loose with his style. He's not like, it's not martial arts for sure. He relies very heavily on his psychic abilities to see what your move is. But if Blade's been doing like mastering martial arts for the past 70 years, then I got to think there's gonna be a lot of muscle memory in there.
Yeah, there's no thought behind it.
Fighting's going to be reflex, and that's going to be it's going to put Edward Cullen at a significant disadvantage to the point that I believe Blade will win in the end.
I think Blade, even if could try to adjust for Blade's movements, Blade can change up his styles quite a bit. I'm sure over time he's learned.
Yeah, I mean, he can just go from fighting with one style to fighting with another, no problem, if he's mastered multiple martial arts.
Yeah. Even if you can read his mind.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, like you said, it's all muscle memory.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. The next time a girl tries to make you watch a Twilight movie, just get her to watch a Blade movie instead.
Yeah, you sit her down and you say, listen, we are watching Blade.
Every time you maybe watch a Twilight movie, we end up watching Wesley Snipes. Like, you run out of Blade movies over time. You're just like, let's watch Money Train or White Men Can't Jump.
Passenger 57.
Yeah.
Was he
always bet on black.
What'd you say, Dustin?
Demolition Man.
Yes, he was in that. He was the Simon Phoenix.
Yeah. So, just every Wesley Snipes movie ever. Sit your girlfriend down to watch it. They'll love it.
I love it, sir. I love it.
Yeah. Don't even be jealous when she's giving googly eyes to Wesley Snipes. He's a stud.
He's a stud that doesn't pay his taxes and went to jail. So that happened.
That's racist.
That's not racist. I didn't say he's a black guy that didn't pay his taxes and went to jail. I'm saying he's a guy that didn't pay his taxes and went to jail. Fuck yourself, Dustin. How's that?
I've got Blade style skills. I can read your mind.
Okay. Blade can't read minds, dumbass.
I can sense that your supernatural ability to be racist.
Oh my god, you are such a dick. I'm not racist.
I sensed it.
All right, we're here to talk about Lord of the Rings, so let's fucking do it. Drew, are you there?
I am here.
Welcome, Drew.
How's
Drew
it going?
Thomas joining us. Drew, I apologized earlier in the episode. Just to make it clear again what happened here. Drew lives in a different time zone, which I did not account for when we scheduled this. We were like, okay, we'll meet at 9:30 on Skype and we'll record the show and it'll be great. And that was 9:30 Drew's time. My bad.
It's all good.
Sorry, brother.
So how did we schedule the first recording? The first time we did this?
You took my time zone into account.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. When Drew said I work till 9, so I'd be home by 9:30, I was like, okay, 9:30, great.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's how that happened.
Okay, so
we got four on here, so let's not all jabber jaws at the same time. But I believe Dustin, you went and saw The Hobbit: The Desolation of Smaug. Drew, did you see it?
I did.
I have not seen it yet. No.
All right, Dustin. Without spoiling anything, should we go see it?
Yes. Like a resounding yes.
Why?
I would say simply, like, if there's one thing you should go see it for, it is how they portrayed this dragon. I am a fan of Middle Earth and dragons and the like, and they made this dragon look awesome. Like, this is the best dragon I've seen since the first movie that old Patrick Stewart was in. Dragonheart, that's it.
No, it's not in Dragonheart.
Film debut.
No. Not at all.
But like the animation of this dragon, very realistic, but like the coolest thing was his personality and his voice, the way he I think you said, what was it?
It's guy who Cumberbatch. Played
Khan? Cumberbatch. Yeah. Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, he's the guy who played Khan, right?
Mm-hmm.
They took his voice, and I think they digitally remastered it or something, and this guy, like, every time the dragon spoke, it was a mixture between intimidation and what's another thing?
Loathing?
kind of. Britton says sexual healing. He was very convincing, and like whenever the words that he used and like his tone of voice made him like seem very
charismatic
and almost not as dangerous, not as intimidating. But then you realize he's an effing dragon. Like you're bouncing back and forth between these two. Like he's talking to Bilbo, and you think, why doesn't he just eat him? But he's a dragon. He's thinking the whole time, you know. He's not gonna eat him. That whole second half of the movie was just amazing. First half was good too.
The first half was all right, but
yeah,
man, that shit honestly, with the dragon was mind blowing.
Yeah, I told Britton this. The first Hobbit movie, Jesus. The first Hobbit movie made me think that these Hobbit movies are going to be more appealing to me than The Lord of the Rings. The second Hobbit movie nailed that into place. Guaranteed, I like the Hobbit movies more than Lord of the Rings.
Awesome.
The third one's going to be amazing.
Well, that sounds cool, man.
Yeah. But we are talking about The Lord of the Rings today, not The Hobbit.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the whole universe, so that's all good.
Okay, right on. Oh, there was one little tie-in. In the very first Hobbit movie, I liked how they used the actor that played Bilbo in the Lord of the Rings movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they used Frodo, too.
Right, yeah, I thought that was very clever. And the guy who plays Bilbo... The younger guy who plays Bilbo in the Hobbit movies does just an amazing job. All in all, yeah, good movies.
Good. I'm sure I speak for everybody when I say I can't wait to go fucking see that.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
So there'll be a Rancor's Night at the Movies coming in a couple months to go see that. So if I don't go see it before... Drew, when last we talked, you were saying that you were a purist on the novels of Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Jeff, where do you stand? Have you read the books? Do you like the movies better? What do you like?
I actually like both.
Okay.
I like some of the things that they did differently in the movies, and I love the books, but I can enjoy both.
Awesome, Blossom. Drew. Mm-hmm. What do we need to talk about that we missed last week?
Well, I think the biggest thing we were talking about last week was difference was between books and movies. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy the movies. You know, when I say I'm a purist, yeah, I think the movies could have done a better job. But, you know, some of the things that they've done, there's the characters that they've cut out, the way things happen, like in the first Lord of the Rings movie, The Fellowship of the Ring, Aragorn gives the hobbits their knives, gives them their swords. And in the movies, or in the books, sorry, they get trapped in a barrow, and this character, Tom Bombadil, gets them out of it, and they find these blades inside the barrow, and he lifts the barrow's curse on these blades and then gives them to the hobbits.
What's a barrow?
A burial mound.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I personally think that would have been a really cool scene to see. You know, there's a... I just think that would have been fun. And then, you know, there's a part where they get, like, swallowed by a tree. You know, same sort of deal.
Especially how that plays in later in the story when Merry stabs the Witch King. Because those blades were created by the people who fought the Witch King originally.
Right.
Well, the tree moving and talking about the Entwives later on in Return of the King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that scene ties in to several other factors later on in the books. But Tom Bombadil doesn't.
Right.
Tom Bombadil just kind of has his thing going on, and then when he's out of the picture, he's out of the picture. But man, were people pissed that he wasn't in the fucking movie.
It's because of that scene. When he lifts the curse, he breaks him out of the barrow, that whole thing in the book. Again, he's a minor character. He's only in there for like three chapters, and he's mentioned a couple times later on in the books. But I I would have loved to have that scene in there. I think that would have been a really, really fun scene to watch play out on film.
Did anybody ever figure out why they decided to exclude that from the draft? Like how we talked about the end of Return of the King, where there's the whole like taking over Sharky takes over Hobbiton, and Peter Jackson just left that out because he didn't like it. Anybody ever figure anything out about Tom Bombadil? Because you can't tell me that they cut that out because they were trying to save time. I mean, the director's cut's fucking 4 hours.
Yeah. I never found anything official. My theory on it would be that because it's not a repeating character throughout all three movies, they didn't want to put it in there because it would be like, okay, here's this dude, and then peace, we're out of here. You know, there would have been no way to tie any of that in. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand them not putting it in there. I wasn't really mad about that. Like I said, I just really would have liked to see those scenes with him on film and see how that worked out. I think it would have been very interesting.
Carl Urban, quite frankly, nowadays, a science fiction fantasy god. He's in everything that's good.
Yeah.
This was the first role I'd ever seen him in.
And I loved him in it.
He played Aylmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Carl Urban's performance, gentlemen?
He brought that character to life. It was great.
And for a very diminished screen time, too, compared to the books. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yep.
Drew? I don't know. Like, he's from New Zealand, and Peter Jackson, you know, loves to hire people from New Zealand for his shit, so that's where that comes in, but it was like, it was just amazing. I thought that's a great start for a really awesome career so far. I mean, now he's Judge Dredd, he's Bones McCoy, he's got this weird, almost human show on Fox. Oh, yeah. Guy's going places.
I still have yet to watch that show. Is it any good?
Chad Edelbrick, Follow Network CEO, loves it. I have not watched it.
Is that the one with the three T's?
What?
Like telepathy, teleporting, and
telekinesis?
Telekinesis?
No. It's about robots.
Okay, I'm thinking of a different one. There's another good show that has the three T's. Anyway, continue.
That is interesting.
I'll come up with it later.
Go for it. The Two Towers. We go to what's the name of the village in Rohan where the king lives?
Edoras.
Yeah, yep. You know why I love that? Because it sounds like they're talking about my butt. They're always like Edoras. Come on, we must take them back to Edoras.
No, I'm not gonna be able to watch it without thinking that. Thank you.
Yep.
Every time you guys watch The Two Towers from now on, you're gonna be thinking of my big fat hairy white ass. Enjoy.
Awesome.
Yeah. Drew, continue with the conversation. What else screams at you about these films, about these books? Here you go. For somebody that hasn't read the books and has only seen the movies.
That's me.
Okay. Dustin. Except, Dustin, you read it at the slowest snail's pace ever. For an average human being that has only seen the movies and not read the books, what can you tell them at this point to get them to read those fucking books that have been around now for, what, 70 years?
Close to that, yeah. Honestly, more battle scenes. You know, there's more fighting, there's more warfare as you get into the second and the third book in the books than there is in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's expanded character bases. Like in this one, they have Aragorn set up as like the only ranger, the only descendant in that, you know, that bloodline. But in the books, there's a whole group of them. So when they go and take it back.
Yeah, the Dunedain, right?
Yeah, yeah. I never figured out how to pronounce that correctly, but yeah, we'll go with that.
I think actually in the movie, Elrond says it.
Yeah, he brings up the name at one point, yeah. So there's that part. And then the other big thing with me was I don't like Aragorn in the movies.
Yeah. Now check yourself, foe, you wreck yourself.
I have reasons behind this.
Okay, let me hear them.
Hear me out here. In my opinion, they completely flipped the characters' motivations. In the books, the sword that he takes with him, you know, the broken sword, the blade that was shattered.
Lou, I think you mean the shards of Narsil.
There you go. Is reforged before they set off on the quest.
Mm-hmm.
The elves reforge it while they're in Rivendell. Aragorn takes it with him, and then when he gets at the, you know, in the third movie, when Elrond brings him the sword, it's like, here it is, reforged. It's this big moment. He actually brings him the crest, you know, his battle flag. So I get why they changed it for the movie, but the whole throughout the entire movies, Aragorn is, you know, he's afraid to take up the burden. He doesn't want to be tempted into evil. Blah 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 blah. In the books, from the start, he's like, you know what? Let's do this. I'm going to go kill some people. You know, he's a raging badass from start to finish, and I just feel that they miscast the King of Fairies as the King of Men.
You heartbreaking son of a bitch. I gotta go cry now. Hang on.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all good. It's all good. We all have opinions. Jeff, counterpoint?
They kind of needed the story to go along with that, though, in the movie. Mm-hmm. He couldn't just be the raging badass. He'd have played too close to Boromir.
A dichotomy?
Yes, thank you.
Ooh.
They needed a big difference between Boromir and Aragorn, who was kind of set up on a pedestal.
That is a really interesting point, and that makes sense, again, when you transition from a book to a visual media. Huh.
Yeah. And I get that. You know, I know that things had to be changed for a movie. I'm not one of those... I've said it before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's ridiculous to think you could do a shot for shot, but that was one of my biggest pet peeves throughout those movies, was that Aragorn kept talking about his fear and his apprehension, and he wasn't sure of himself. And in the books, that didn't happen at all.
In the time the books were written, men were men.
Well, that's
they wanted
also
chicks
true.
To go see this movie.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Having to pretend that men have feelings, I don't get it.
You ever, you know, the books, famously, The Return of the King comes with a bunch of appendices in the back.
Uh-huh.
You ever go through the timeline and try to figure out exactly how old Aragorn is when he dies?
Never have, actually.
He's like 400.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very old man.
Just crazy to me. But that's something that they never bring up in the movie. In the extended version, they say how old he is.
Yeah.
But they never say why. They don't ever say that he's part elf.
That's true.
He's not part elf.
What is he?
He's a descendant of Numenor, which were the high men from the island away from Middle Earth. I can't remember the name of it.
Not the Grey Havens, right?
No. The island in between. Well, the Grey Havens leaves to go to the Elven Island, that's further away, and the men's island was in between the. Where the elves go and Middle Earth.
Hmm.
And when men fell, the god of Middle Earth, I don't remember his name, Eru or something like that, destroyed the men's island, and the surviving Numenor came to Middle Earth. And that's who Aragorn is descended from.
Oh, very good. Now what about the Ishtari, the wizards? How old are they?
It doesn't really say.
But it does say when they show up on Middle Earth. I can't remember it right now, but I think it's like they're like 3 or 6,000 years old. I can't remember which.
Yeah.
I believe in the movie, Gandalf says that 60 times the life of a man I've lived. So 60 lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's gotta be a pretty long time, right?
Yeah, the wizards were put there to battle Sauron after the fall of Morgul and everything like that.
Well, were they put down? No, they were put down after Mordor fell, after Sauron was defeated.
No.
No?
No.
Drew?
No.
Damn it. I gotta reread these fucking books.
Yeah, no. The I'm not sure how old they are. I was distracted. I was trying to find the name of that island because you got me thinking about that.
Well, while you're looking that up, let me say something.
Okay.
When these movies first came out and were hitting real big, I went on a trip to France. And there are a lot of places where you could buy replica weapons in small towns in France. Like, I guess people still buy a lot of swords there and shit and battle axes and what have you. There were so fucking many replicas of, like, the Uruk-hai swords and Aragorn sword and Sting. And
I have Sting.
You have a Sting? That's all. Does it glow blue when orcs are about?
No. I wish.
Be fucking cool. But yeah, there was just like stores full of them, if you can imagine it. Like lining the walls is labeled swords from the Lord of the Rings universe. I just thought it was funny.
I always wanted to get Glamdring, but I never did. Glamdring was Gandalf's sword.
Yes. What did they rename Narsil after it was reforged?
Andaril?
Andaril, yep. Right. I always thought Narsil was a better name. I don't know. Drew, you found your answer?
Nope.
Well,
I know that the Istari came to Middle-earth around the year 1050 of the Third Age, whatever that means.
The Third Age of Man.
Oh, I'm wrong. Yeah. They came after
Sauron's defeat?
Well, kind of. One of Sauron's defeats. Sauron was defeated on the island of Men. He went there and subverted the Men, and that's how they fell. His body was destroyed during that.
Yeah, Gandalf and cast him from the White Council and breaks his staff. Is that...
That's right. Saruman, not Sauron.
Gotcha.
They were... When Sauron's spirit left the island and came back to Middle-earth, the necromancer that they talk about in The Hobbit is Sauron.
Yeah.
And the Ishtari were put there to combat that.
Okay. Yay, Matthew was right about something.
Yep, sorry. I thought it was earlier than that.
Hooray me. Gentlemen, what else needs to be discussed about Lord of the Rings before we sign off today? Here is your free space to just say whatever you feel about Lord of the Rings, movies or books.
Lord of the Rings is kind of the first mainstream fantasy that really got big. A lot of the archetypes that we get in everything else, sci-fi and fantasy, comes back to this. Like Legolas and Gimli's friendship is, I mean, you can say that the odd couple, the fantasy odd couple started earlier than that, but this is the first mainstream one where you have the odd couple. They normally would be enemies, but they're best friends.
Kirk and Spock.
I mean, you wouldn't have Han and Chewie if you didn't have Legolas and Gimli.
Hmm.
Yeah. And going further with that point, it's also whenever you're playing, a video game series, if you pick an elf race, they are always archers almost constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Dwarves or orcs or anything like that, you know, they're always using axes. Men are always using swords.
Dwarves are always miners, artisans, craftsmen.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's shaped everything, from Skyrim and on back, every archetype, when you think of, even now, someone says, dwarf, or you're playing, even like Dungeons and Dragons, it's done. The whole thing is based off the archetypes that Tolkien set up in Lord of the Rings.
Dungeons & Dragons was based directly on this, to the point that they had to change the name of one of the races because Tolkien's family was going to sue them. That's why we have halflings instead of hobbits, because Tolkien didn't copyright halfling.
Right.
Halflings are cooler anyway.
Yeah.
You're so super sweet.
I mean, really, halflings are a lot cooler. This would be my closing thought. Halflings, they're much more agile. An insane amount of dexterity. When you think of a hobbit, I mean, I guess they do some climbing and stuff, but for the most part, they're falling all over themselves throughout the movies.
No. What was Bilbo? What was he hired as?
A thief. Yeah. But he was a shitty thief, though, right?
Was he?
Yeah.
He was. No, he wasn't.
He outthought and outmaneuvered every situation he was in.
Mm-hmm.
Barely. Like,
he stole like the heart stone.
Hey, a win's a win, dude.
Yeah. He managed to steal the heart stone and sneak out of the mountain, after Smaug is killed, he steals the stone, sneaks out, sneaks into the camp of men and presents it to them as a way to barter peace, and you're telling me he's not sneaky?
Well, he stole the one ring. The two movies that I've seen, like, maybe it's because he doesn't quite have the fortitude to handle it, like the mental fortitude, but he's, like, he doesn't, when I think of a thief, in most of the games that I've played, thieves are a little more, they're a lot better at what they do. That's not a very good way to put it.
They're professional thieves.
Yeah, he's a guy that just wants to just live in his home. He wants to have dinner every night. He just wants to, read books. He's not, like, mentally, Bilbo Baggins is not a thief, in my opinion. He throughout the series of or like maybe in the books or whatever, but in the movies, like, he grows to be a thief, but starting out, that's not necessarily what his mind is set at,
But adventuring's in his blood. That's why he chases after him.
Right, and adventuring is one thing. Thievery is a different thing, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in you can be any class and still love adventuring. You just have your own, viewpoints and tactics. So halflings better than hobbits.
Fuck yeah. All right, gentlemen, has this been a sufficiently nerdy conversation for you this evening?
Indeed.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. It's always good to flex that little muscle, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Feels good.
That sounded sexy when you said that, Drew. I'm not going to lie.
Well, everything I said is sexy. I got this deep baritone voice. You know how it is.
Turgid. Turgid. That's the only thing I had to say. Hey, why did Frodo read The Lord of the Rings 50 times? Because it was hobbit forming.
Wow.
How many quarters does it take to play the new Lord of the Rings pinball game?
How many?
None. It only takes Tolkien's.
Oh, I already heard that.
You heard that one? Damn it.
Yeah.
Okay. What do the hobbits call Gandalf when he drinks too much ale?
What?
The White Wizard. What did Frodo say when he saw the trees dancing?
What?
That's entertainment. Why was it so hard to storm Sauron's lair?
Why?
Because no matter how many you opened, there were always more door. All right, last one. This is my favorite. What did Pippin do when he got drunk?
What?
He began to feel merry.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Just perfect.
Hey, we're going to leave you with a little commercial this week for Our friend of the show and Follow Network's employee, Lucas Patterson's novella, L'Industria Inferni, however the fuck he says it. Here's the commercial. Have a great one. We'll see you next time at the brothel.
Bye.
Say goodbye, dicks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Dicks. Dicka!
Family. It's about trust, honor, and blood. At least that's what they tell me. What would you do if you'd given everything you ever wanted, and in that same instant, lost everything you never realized you had? Would you seek answers? Retribution? Vengeance? Me? I chose all the above. My name is Johnny Romano, and I'm a made man in the family DeLuca. But what my family didn't realize was that they made me into a monster, a killer, a vigilante. Family. It's about trust, honor, and blood. But tonight, their blood will flood the streets. L'Industria Inferni, a novella by Lucas Patterson. Now available on Nook and Kindle.